Welcome to the Xbox Wrap-Up Podcast. I'm your host, Captain Logan, or just Logan, depends on how you know me. We're going to be taking the next hour to sit back, relax, and take a look at what's been going on in the gaming sphere. All of the news that you've been wondering about this week, you may have heard a little bit of things here and there, but I'm going to make sure that you know exactly what happened this week and talk about some other things as well, too. So in this episode, we're going to be talking about Remedy and Rockstar coming together to remake the Max Payne games. We're going to be talking about Epic and Lego coming together to make a metaverse for kids. I'm going to be talking about Lego Star Wars: A Skywalker Saga. I picked up the game, I played a little bit of it, and I want to let you know what I think of it. Also, the biggest news this week has to be Unreal Engine 5. There was so much news that came as a result of it, plus just to find out all the different game companies that are going to be making games in Unreal Engine 5. It's staggering. A lot of those, surprisingly enough, coming from Xbox, from Microsoft. So we'll be talking about that. I want to talk a little bit about some of the other stuff that's going on as far as like Crystal Dynamics. There was Ubisoft news with NFTs and Breakpoint stopping. There's going to be a bunch of stuff going on with Activision Blizzard, with them converting all of their QA staff to full-time, and how that's going to really screw over a bunch of people over at Ravensoft, because they're forming a union and they're not going to do it. So we're going to be talking about some of the games that came to Game Pass as far as their reviews go, with like MLB The Show and how people are liking that. All that and more on this week's episode of the Xbox Wrap-Up. So I've got the stories laid out. You know it's coming. It's time to dive in. So sit back, relax, and enjoy this week's episode of the Xbox Wrap-Up. I think the first story, and probably one of the most important ones to come out of this week, was the Activision Blizzard news and how they were converting all of their QA staff or quality assurance staff to full-time employees. There's been some updates on this, so I'm going to get you the latest news. The original story, thanks to Matt Kim over IGN, I'm reading from his report there, and I'll have a link in the show notes if you want to read the full thing, says that Activision Blizzard has announced that it will be converting nearly 1,100 U.S.-based temporary and contingent QA workers to full-time positions. The company says that the change will increase Activision Publishing's total full-time staff by 25%, following a recent conversion of nearly 500 contractors to full-time employees. However, some dozen QA members at Ravensoft Software will not be part of this transition, leading to a walkout at the studio. Along with the move to full-time QA workers, they will have their hourly rate increased to $20 per hour and will be able to partake in the company's bonus plan and have access to full-time benefits. So some quick thoughts on this. It really blows that they are not going to bring up the QA team who unionized over at Raven Software due to poor working conditions and inequality. They have been working to try and get that. The fact that QA for Activision Blizzard makes up 25% of the company's full-time staff is insane. The fact that that 25% of your company, Activision Blizzard, is now going to be full-time staff by an increase of 25% because those are the QA testers? What the hell are you doing having these people on temporary and contract terms for your game? It's no wonder your games have been failing lately. You don't treat your QA staff like they're actual devs. Spoiler alert, they are actual devs. They should be treated just as equally, and their jobs are as important, if not more important, than most of the roles in a game. Granted, you probably can't do a whole lot with textures, but I guarantee you that the textures won't matter if you can't QA the game to make sure it doesn't break when it gets launched. So I'm glad that they're doing this. I have a feeling that a lot of this really does kind of come as a result of some legal disputes. One of the updates that came out on 4/7, a little bit later or earlier today, I guess, new details, Matt Kim writes, about Activision Blizzard's plan for converting QA testers to full-time employees have emerged. In a statement to Bloomberg, the Raven employees who formed a union earlier this year will not receive the new pay bump due to legal obligations under the National Labor Relations Act. So basically, they have to bargain for the same privileges that the QA testers who are now going to be converted to full time are going to be getting as a result of this. And I think the reason why they are doing this, and I don't have any knowledge of this, but I would imagine that the reason why they are doing this is because there is actually there's a couple lawsuits going on as a result of this, but I imagine having full time employees as opposed to all of these contracts and temporary positions would make the transition for the purchase for Activision Blizzard by Microsoft to be a lot smoother. There's some interesting information going on as of the senators over with Senator Elizabeth Warren herself and Cory Booker, as well as a few other liberal state representatives, or not state representatives, Senate representatives, were out in force on Sunday, basically saying that they were going to be looking into the purchase by Activision or by Microsoft for Activision Blizzard. Elizabeth Warren, very staunch on breaking up big tech. And the cited reason was is that poorer working conditions might be a concern when Microsoft purchases Activision Blizzard, which feels like a very tone-deaf statement, because I don't think anything could get any worse right now over at Activision Blizzard with Bobby Kotick in place. In fact, I think if anything, things are going to improve substantially as a result of Microsoft purchasing Activision Blizzard. And in essence, they are going to clean house. And you can already see some of the steps of that happening. Activision Blizzard realizes that their reputation is hurting their stocks, and that's generally when businesses start to pay attention. So I'm really glad that the full-time employees or the QA testers that make up 25% of the full-time status employees over at Activision Blizzard are now going to be given that status. I think it's so ridiculous that it even had to even get to this point. It's so stupid, which is crazy because the job that I'm working now is effectively the same as a QA tester right now, except the research that I do for my job is a vastly different industry compared to gaming. But the pay and the benefits are right on par with pretty much what I'm at right now. So it's crazy to think that I've had to spend years getting to the position that I am now, and that QA testers are just barely starting to get to this, given how much money the freaking games industry makes as an entertainment medium. It's insane that they're getting paid that little. In other words, I want them to get paid closer to like $25-$30 bucks an hour easily. Just in California alone, having a job that pays $20 bucks an hour might help you with a second job or someone who can help do the income to be able to live in that area, to be able to go to active, to be able to work at Blizzard. You need to be making around $35-$40 bucks at least. And most QA testers that I know of, or most community management that has worked at Blizzard, have had to bunk up. Even like animators and modelers, environment artists, they have to go in together on a house to be able to afford to live in OC. It's ridiculous. Like, pay them a living wage. It's an entertainment medium. You make millions of dollars every year on profit, and your employees are having to bunk up with each other just to cover the rent. It's ridiculous. So I'm really glad that they're finally getting this, because at least it means that a QA tester at Activision Blizzard is actually going to be given benefits so that they can actually have things like doctor's visits and maternity leave and all the other stupid stuff that they try to get away from with temporary and contract work. Anyway, that's the Activision Blizzard update for this week. Before we disembark from the stupid station, I figured this is another great opportunity to point out Ubisoft for being a really stupid company on some of the stuff that they're doing. Let's talk about Ghost Recon Breakpoint. This article comes to us thanks to George Yang from IGN. Ubisoft has announced that it will be ending content support for Ghost Recon Breakpoint after a little over 2 years of continuous updates. The final piece of content, Operation Motherland, launched back November 2nd in 2021. The reason this is crazy is because this is the game, if you don't remember, that Ubisoft was testing their stupid NFT stuff with. So if you were playing Ghost Recon Breakout for, I believe it's 300 hours, you'd be eligible to be able to pick up the stupid NFTs. And really, like, the fact that they're basically saying that they're going to stop support of this because no one's playing the game is ridiculous and just shows how shitty NFTs are and how they are going to absolutely ruin games if more companies get invested in this. They do not belong in video games, and this is a perfect example as to why. So let's read the tweet from Ghost Recon. They say, "Hey Ghosts, first we want to thank you for all your love and support you've brought to the game. During the past 2 years, we released more than 11 updates and supported several unique initiatives." That's a weird way to say NFT. "From the Ghost Experience, the return of AI teammates, special operations with Sam Fisher," which is a, I'm just going to say it right now, a really shitty thing to do to the Splinter Cell community, "working on R6 operators in Operation Amber Sky, and lastly, our Plant a Tree project, we have been hard at work to add extra content to Ghost Recon Breakpoint. The last 4 months marked the release of our final piece of content, the brand new Operation Motherland mode. Tons of new items, including the 20th anniversary iconic outfits and the quartz items for Ghost Recon Breakpoint." Again, the quartz items being those NFTs. "We will continue to maintain our servers for both Ghost Recon Wildlands and Ghost Recon Breakpoint, and truly hope you will continue to enjoy the game and have fun in solo or co-op with your friends. From the entire Ghost Recon team, we want to thank you again for your continued support and love you have for the franchise. The feedback you have given for Ghost Recon Breakpoint has been instrumental and will help shape the future of the franchise. Until next time, Ghosts." So, what does this mean for people that picked up quartz items? Well, first off, your items depreciated in value significantly with the announcement. Congratulations. This is the joys of playing with stock market items that are just digital goods. Those people will have those. They are going to do that. They have also said that they are going to be making a new game that is going to be another Ghost Recon game, and that they will find a way to replace the value of the Ghost Recon NFTs, the quartz items that people purchased. How about this? You just refund them the money and you stop making NFTs, you scummy bastards. I'm sorry to say that a lot of Ghost Recon fans are probably bummed out about this. I'm sure that there will be another Ghost Recon game in the future that they've stated, and that it will probably be the kind of normal stuff that Ubisoft does. They paint by numbers nowadays, so if you played Far Cry 6 or Assassin's Creed Valhalla, you'll probably be able to play Ghost Recon in that similar vein. There's plenty of Ubisoft games. They always go on sale, so don't worry about picking them up day one. Wait till they've been out for at least 6 months, and you'll probably be able to pick them up for about $30. As we leave the stupid station, this train is rolling on forward. The next article is actually going to come to us via Remedy themselves. They have recently announced, and if you're not familiar with Remedy, they're the ones that actually make Alan Wake, Control. They're actually going to be making Alan Wake 2, which is really exciting as well, too. But Remedy announced this week that they are going to be remaking Max Payne and Max Payne 2, The Fall of Max Payne. Now, if you're not familiar, this is something that was published by Rockstar Games, and many people have criticized Rockstar for leaning too heavily on Grand Theft Auto as their cash cow, citing issues with Steam being the same thing that they did, where they wanted to make another Half-Life game, and then Steam took off, and they kept making money off of that. Same thing kind of with Rockstar. Rockstar's going with GTA Plus soon. They're going to try and make a revenue service off of that, and Remedy is kind of working with, they have signed paperwork to actually work on a new Max Payne 1 and 2 project. So I'm going to be reading from the press release that they put out on the 6th, or I guess yesterday as of recording. Remedy Entertainment, the creators of Max Payne, are pleased to announce that they will remake the iconic Max Payne and Max Payne 2, The Fall of Max Payne video games in a new development agreement with Rockstar Games. The relationship between Remedy and Rockstar Games dates back to the original release of the critically acclaimed Max Payne and Max Payne 2, developed by Remedy and published by Rockstar Games. Both games left an indelible mark in pop culture, lauded for their neo-noir atmosphere or new dark, groundbreaking storytelling, and bullet time gunplay. We were thrilled when our longtime friends at Remedy approached us about remaking the original Max Payne game, said Sam Houser, founder of Rockstar Games. We are massive fans of the work the Remedy team has created over the years, and we can't wait to play these new versions. Max Payne has always held a special place in our hearts of everyone at Remedy, and we know the millions of fans worldwide feel the same, said Remedy CEO Taro Vitrala. We're hugely excited to be working with our partners at Rockstar Games once again for a chance to bring the story, action, and atmosphere of the original Max Payne games back to players in new ways. Under the development agreement signed today, Remedy will develop the games as a single title for PC, PS5, and Xbox Series X/S using its proprietary Northlight game engine. The game's development budget will be financed by Rockstar Games, the size of which will be in line with a typical Remedy AAA game production. Under the agreement, Remedy has a royalty opportunity after Rockstar Games has recouped its development, marketing, and other costs for distributing and publishing the game. The project is currently in open concept development stage. This is a great announcement. Max Payne and Max Payne 2, which Max Payne 2 I never played, but Max Payne 1 was good. They're very good games, and they introduced bullet time, and I think as a result of The Matrix, for the most part, took a lot from that. Or not Matrix, the other way around. Max Payne took a lot of the bullet time from what's it called? From The Matrix. Man, why am I don't know why I'm struggling with that. But it was a really good game about a cop who lost his family and then turned into a vigilante. This is something that I know a lot of people love, a lot of people have wanted. This was a really popular game on PlayStation 2 when I was playing it. And for the most part, just really happy to see Remedy do this. If you guys haven't played Control, Control is a fantastic game. And the destruction and physics involved with Control are probably some of the best I've ever seen in a video game. In fact, it's to the point where if they're using the Northlight engine from Control, I can't wait to see what they do with a remake of Max Payne 1 and 2. Combining the two games into one, I think, is a great way to kind of shore up some of the issues that might come as a result of trying to do one game and then see how that performs before jumping into the second. This just takes the story and puts it all into one. Having it look like Control is going to be fantastic. I like Control a lot. I think it's a great game. I think they've done a great job with it. I think Remedy really knows how to make some games lately that are just stellar, absolutely stellar. I can't agree with their publishing decisions as far as like the Control Ultimate Edition not being something that is just given to players who have already purchased it as a, you know, a thank you for, you know, supporting early, and then making those players rebuy the game if they want to have the next gen features. That was a pretty shitty deal, not gonna lie. I think Remedy took some heat for that. And I think they really shouldn't have done that. But I'm willing to bet that the reason for it was them trying to get some money so that they could put together what they wanted to do, which was Alan Wake 2. And this tells me that this is them kind of securing their next franchise of or their next game that they want to develop. And them going to Rockstar for the publishing rights, I think, is smart, considering they're the ones that still, I think, have rights to be able to publish it. And as a result, having them foot the bill just kind of secures their legacy as far as what happens after Alan Wake 2, which, if you don't know, is going to be a lot more of a horror game than the thriller that the original was. And Alan Wake 1 was actually just recently remastered and is available not only on backwards compatibility, but on the new gen systems as well. Something that if you don't mind a little bit of thrills, you could probably jump into Alan Wake 1, get caught up. And if you don't mind horror games, look forward to Alan Wake 2 in the future. As we dive into Xbox news, I wanted to bring up an opinion piece from, I believe this is Jez Corden over at Windows Central. Jez, a very interesting chap. He does not mind leaking stuff for the sake of telling people what's going on, because it's what drives traffic to Windows Central, which is his income. So I don't really blame him for what he does. I just don't necessarily agree with his decisions to leak games out before they get a chance to announce themselves. I understand why he does it, and I'm not going to tell him not to do it. I just don't necessarily agree with it, but I do agree with Jez on a bunch of other stuff. And the opinion piece that I wanted to touch on kind of is near and dear to my heart, much like I'm sure it is to his, because he and I are both very large Blizzard fans, even though I don't believe we've spoken specifically about it. I know we've exchanged tweets about it, but he and I are big fans of Blizzard Entertainment. We've been fans of Blizzard Entertainment for a very long time, and they've really screwed themselves over a few times and really pissed us off. And they definitely deserve to be holding their feet to the fire on this. But the opinion piece that he put up was a really interesting one that I wanted to touch on, because I have personally been having some serious frustrations with the PC app for Xbox. And the piece is, should Xbox move its PC Game Pass operations to Battle.net? Which, if you're not familiar, Battle.net is a great app. It is a stellar, fantastic app that recently got a facelift that I don't necessarily agree with, but the game itself, or the application itself on PC, is still almost entirely perfect. Like, it really does everything it needs to do, and it does it well. And in fact, the voice and friends lists on it are all really good as well. Like, I've really enjoyed Battle.net's voice service, just because it's so clean, it's so clear, and it's an integrated system built in for players of their games. And it's almost as good as Discord is, to be perfectly honest. So the opinion piece comes in asking if it should be something that they should move the Xbox app over to the Battle.net. And the reason for it is pretty clear. Right now, as I'm looking at the Xbox app, it's recently got a nice refresh. And it looks pretty. It definitely does that. But when I go to click on my library, I see all the games that I have currently installed. I can take a look at the cloud gaming section, and it has a list of the different things as far as what you need, as far as controller, network, and settings. None of the games are loading. And if I go to Game Pass, it'll load the top banner bars for me, but it won't load any of the games underneath of it. Now, if I go to the store doesn't even load, period. Like, it just doesn't even open. So I've taken a look at, like, the community. I think the community section is the one thing that actually works the best. But if I wanted to say, like, I don't know, relaunch the game, if I went up to the top right corner and clicked X, it registers that I clicked X, but it doesn't actually do anything. This is where I think Jez's frustration is coming from. Anytime I want to close the Xbox app on my PC, I don't go to the X anymore. I go to processes in my task manager. I click on the Xbox app where there's three little things. One's a runtime broker, one's the Xbox app, and then one is the Xbox app services.exe. I click on those and I click end task. And lo and behold, the Xbox app closes. Now, if I go to reopen it, some of the issues that I've had in the past don't come back, and I can use it from time to time, especially when I try to do cloud streaming or if I try to stream from my console. Streaming from my console is actually probably one of the most reliable things that I can do on there. But the notifications panel always tells me about the game that I installed at least 4 weeks ago. It tells me, hey, by the way, Rainbow Six Extraction finished downloading. You can play that now. And it's like, well, that's great. Destiny 2 has had an update available for the last 2 months, even though it's updated. Even though I click update and I continue to do that. By the way, Game Pass 2 or Destiny 2 on Game Pass for some reason is leaving Game Pass. I'm not sure why, considering it's a free-to-play game unless you purchase the expansions, which the expansions aren't available on Game Pass. So I'm not quite sure what's going on, but you can at least still kind of rely on getting that day one login for your rewards. The points that went from 5 down to 3, you can still use Destiny 2 to be able to get those points. But overall, I would say that the Xbox app really sucks. And I provide feedback about this on a regular basis. Anytime it quits, I usually try to, or anytime it doesn't quit, I usually leave feedback. Anytime it stutters or snags on something, I usually leave feedback. And sometimes when I'm leaving feedback, I have to submit another feedback about how my previous feedback locked up and I couldn't submit the feedback for the other thing that broke. So they recently added support for the Xbox app to be able to install to specific drives, which is really nice considering my C drive is almost completely full and I can't use it for anything other than just having the programs that I use on a regular basis on there. But most of my programs are actually installed on my D drive, which is just a giant terabyte platter disk, which is terrible for running games off of because it's 7,200 RPM and I don't have a way to install an NVMe, or I guess I probably could put an SSD in there, but it would be adding sunk cost into a system that already needs to get updated, and I'm just going to have to get a new PC. So right now I'm not in a really good place to be able to trust the Xbox game app to be able to work the way I want it to. And Game Bar is better, but it definitely took a couple years for Game Bar to get to the place that it's at right now. And they're still trying to work really hard on this Xbox app. So when I read the article from Jez Gordon over at Windows Central asking the question, should Xbox move the PC gaming pass or Game Pass operations to battle.net? I internally screamed yes, because of all the games that I play, the ones that are from the battle.net app are the most reliable when it comes to updates, when it comes to playing, when it comes to giving me news about what's going on. And the team over at Blizzard who actually work on this app are some of the best at making sure that this actually works out well. I will say that Jess Gordon's website is terrible when it comes to presentation. I absolutely hate going to windowscentral.com because of all the stupid stuff I have to see on there. But I do love Jez's articles from time to time. He puts out some really interesting thoughts. But I feel like with the acquisition merger coming, that I hope that there's enough humility for Xbox and the team that's over there building the PC app that they can take the folks that are working on the battle.net app and help them either integrate battle.net into Xbox Game Pass and have them take over the reins of doing it, which honestly is a really terrible idea because I think that the code for right now for the Xbox PC app is terrible and should just be scrapped at this point. And I really think they need to rebrand battle.net. They can call it, you know, Xbox PC battle.net, and that way it holds on to the legacy of battle.net and it lets people know that it's the Xbox app, or it just copy it and then have that as the actual app for Xbox Game Pass and leave battle.net the where it is. So all of the angry PC gamers out there who don't want their filthy Xbox games to show up on their battle.net app can be happy, even though we've been dealing with the fact that we've had to live with Activision. And it started with Bungie, honestly, which was really a pain point for a lot of Blizzard fans. We did not want other games coming to our battle.net launcher. It was battle.net for a reason. It had legacy for 20 some years before this started to change over, and we just kind of like things to stay the same because we're stupid humans. But I do think that they need to ditch the actual Game Pass system. I think that the app for Xbox is terrible, and I really think that they need to do something to fix that. And I think honestly, I think the best thing to do is honestly just use the battle.net app. A lot of the stories this week don't really seem to be tied to any one thing in particular. And that includes this next story, which comes to us thanks to GameSpot.com with Eddie Macouch, I think it's Macouch. The Fortnite studio is deciding to team up with LEGO Group to announce a long-term deal to help shape the future of the metaverse. If you're not familiar with metaverse, that is the term currently being used to describe online communities, something many of us have already been living with for a number of years. And for some reason, that happens to be the word that everyone is latching onto in the business world. So they are looking to create a future universe or metaverse, specifically that makes it safe for kids and families. This is something I do actually really like. Details are thin at the moment, according to the article, but Epic and LEGO Group said that they will work together to build an immersive, creative, inspiring, and engaging digital experience for kids of all ages to enjoy together. The description goes on. The family-friendly digital experience will give access to kids to tools that will empower them to become confident creators and deliver amazing play opportunities in a safe and positive space. That's kind of an interesting one to me because I get it. Like Minecraft, Roblox, these are things that kids are currently using right now, and they're using it to play games, and they are creating in there, and it's great that they're doing that, but I kind of wonder where LEGO comes into this. Are they just looking to build something that is kind of like the LEGO Worlds game that they had, but thanks to Epic's reach and development tools to be able to do something that stretches beyond that, I guess? Maybe they're looking to do that something where they can actually have it like an online experience, kind of LEGO Worlds-esque, but more like a Minecraft environment where you can have custom servers and things like that. It's going to be a while before we find anything out like this. I'm not really in it for this metaverse thing as far as the terminology goes, but I do like the idea of creating safe places for kids to be able to jump on. LEGO is a group that has been doing this for years, and Epic is doing really well with Fortnite. So I think this is a great partnership. I think it's better than some of the interesting things that have been coming out of Roblox. Not to say that anything has been bad, but I don't know much about it. So I have a hesitance towards it. Whereas LEGO, I know, and I'm comfortable, and that's the brand that I would probably latch on to and stuff. So Tim Sweeney, CEO of Epic Games, said that the LEGO group has captivated the imagination of children and adults through creative play for nearly a century, and we're excited to come together to build a space in the metaverse that's fun, entertaining, and made for kids and families. So basically just kind of summarizing what the article is about. So it's interesting to see where this goes, especially given the recent news about Unreal Engine 5. So without further ado, let's dive into Unreal Engine 5. There was a State of Unreal, which is what they're calling their presentation, their keynote presentation, where they released Unreal Engine 5. And I have to say, I'm really impressed, not just with like the world building tools or the different new features that are coming as far as like their tessellation or their ray tracing, but MetaHuman is really amazing. Being able to create almost lifelike looking humans that are randomized, that are about as close to an actual human as we've been able to get outside of like movies and TVs, putting that into the power of anyone really at this point. Unreal Engine 5 is going to be free, very much like Unreal Engine 4. You can develop on it and make your own game if that's something that you want to do. And I think it's amazing. I think it's great. With the announcement, we did find out that they are also putting in a project called the Lyra Project. This is a template. It's built in with Unreal Engine's server structure and their multiplayer suite. It is essentially a gray box environment for you to be able to have the base of an actual third person shooter that you can manipulate. You can change anything. You can go and add your own skins. You can build your own levels. But Lyra is literally like a third person action shooter that is ready to go, already built in there, and that is free to anyone that has Unreal Engine 5. You can play around and you can tweak it. You can create your own environments. You can change it up. If you want to make the next Splitgate, Lyra is halfway there for you, and it's kind of amazing. Also, the Matrix Unreal Engine demo that was that came out on the during the Keeleys, I believe, is when it went live. That is all available on the UE 5 engine as well, too. So if you checked out that Matrix demo and you thought, wow, this world is amazing, the humans look great, the cars are fantastic, it's an amazing experience, all of those assets are available for free in this suite. You get that all for free just with Unreal Engine 5. It's kind of insane. The Lyra project, one of the things that they talked about, there's three play modes already intrinsically built into this project. There's Elimination, Control Point, and a Party mode, which is a top-down kind of weird shooter version thing of it. But it's already built in there. So all you have to do is edit the levels to what you want the levels to look like, skin the characters, and all of the fundamentals are already built in. You could ship that on Steam if you really, really wanted to. One of the cool things that we found out about that was an app that's coming that's called Sketchfab. Sketchfab essentially is a mobile app that you can install and use with your phone to scan in any real life object that you want into to be able to make skins for games. So if you have the example they used is a really nice leather armchair, they gave you the tools. It would use AR to be able to tell you like where you're at with the scanning, where you need to move, what kind of angles you need to get, and let you scan in an entire object from real life for free. It's insane. It's absolutely insane. The ability to do basically whatever you want in a video game has been now just made so much easier with Unreal Engine 5. There's been a ton of different studios that have come out to kind of say like that they are going to be using it. One of the coolest things that I thought was really nice with Unreal Engine 5 actually has to do with the fact that Fortnite is currently working off of Unreal Engine 4, and they were actually able to migrate Unreal Engine 4 to Unreal Engine 5 for Fortnite. They were basically able to take the entire game and transition it into Unreal Engine 5, which is absolutely insane. Because I did not realize that this was something that was even feasible. My understanding of games is that when you build a game, you're developing it kind of loosely for a certain amount of time, and you're able to update the actual game engine to a certain point before eventually you get so far in development that you actually have to lock down the version of Unreal Engine that you're developing for. And after that, you basically have to stick with that version. That version, that build of Unreal is going to be the one that you ship with, which is kind of a bummer because sometimes builds can introduce really, really good features that you don't necessarily get to implement in unless you go in and kind of hard code those into the actual engine. So like server stability or multiplayer features or metahumans, different ray tracing features, things like that. All of those different features are all things that can come with future updates. But once you've locked in your actual engine version, you really don't get access to those features. So it was really cool to kind of see them say that they were able to take Fortnite and active games as a service that's free to play and transition that from Unreal Engine 4 to Unreal Engine 5 and bring all of the tools that they were able to use with Unreal Engine 5 into Fortnite and just have it be seamless, which is insane. It's so crazy that that's what's going on. One of the coolest things that came as a result of this was the announcement of all the studios that are actually going to be utilizing Unreal Engine 5. And there's a few that are kind of amazing that I'm looking forward to. One of the things that I'm personally excited for is Rare. Rare's been making Sea of Thieves. Sea of Thieves is running off of Unreal Engine 4. They missed some server updates that I think they've had to hard code into the actual engine, which is kind of a bummer. But Everwild is a game that no one really knows a whole lot about. In fact, they've gone and kind of gone back and tried to decide what kind of a game they want to do. And I think a lot of that is a result of the success of Sea of Thieves. I think Sea of Thieves has taught them a lot about what they can and may want to do in the future with Everwild. So if Everwild has kind of rebooted to some extent, I would not be surprised if that's as a result of them trying and testing out to see what they can do with Unreal Engine 5. The Coalition, makers of Gears, have been working on the Matrix demo for Unreal Engine 5. They are closely tied in to work on some of the demos that have been coming out. And I can't wait to find out what the Coalition want to do with Unreal Engine 5 as they make the next Gears game. There's a bunch of other ones. The Initiative, we know, is working with Unreal Engine 5. Undead Labs is working on State of Decay 3 and Unreal Engine 5. PlayStation VR is going to take Unreal Engine 5 and utilize that as well. Obsidian Games, Devolver Digital. What are some of the others? Let me look at here. See, Haven Studios, Ninja Theory, Sumo Digital. Three really great studios that are working on there. In Exile is going to be working with it. CD Projekt Red is going to be making the next Witcher game in Unreal Engine 5, moving away from their Red engine, which I'm really glad for because there's better support for Unreal, in my opinion. Codemasters, if you're a racing fan, is going to be using it. Frostbite, one of the new RTS strategy developers that were some of the best StarCraft 2 devs from Blizzard, are going to be doing Unreal Engine 5. And Dreams is going to be working with Unreal Engine 5. Double Fine is going to be using it. Remedy, who else am I missing here? There's a whole bunch. PlayStation in general is going to wait to be seen, like who's actually going to be using it. I know a lot of the first party studios have their own that they're going to be using it, but genuinely I would say that Xbox is probably the biggest company, the biggest publisher, probably a better way of saying, is the one that is really going to help push Unreal Engine 5 to mass adoption. And I'm kind of here for it. And you might be wondering, like, is there a drawback to this? And there definitely is. Take a game like Days Gone, which I think is ironic that the director for Days Gone is actually going over to Crystal Dynamics, and I'll get a little bit into that. But Jeff Ross, who used to be working for, who was he working for? He was working for Bend Studios. They were working on Days Gone, and he talked about how he wants to work on an Uncharted game, and that's not going to happen. So he's ended up moving over to Crystal Dynamics to hopefully work on Tomb Raider, which I'll talk about in a sec. But with the drawbacks potentially with Unreal Engine 5, one of the things that you might start noticing is that you start getting a lot of the same kind of games with that engine, because the engine can only do so much. So you look at the exceptions to the rule, State of Decay, Sea of Thieves, and then you look at what can be done with some of the base stuff like Coalition does with Gears. A lot of games that come from Unreal Engine 5, sometimes the support for something you want to do in that engine is not there, and you kind of have to either code out the tools yourselves to be able to do it, or you have to ask Epic for help to try and do that. But one of the things that you start to notice is games tend to start having the same type of UI layout for like inventory and skills, and it's all the same kind of design, and everyone's worked out like what the best one is. You know, you play a PlayStation game and you look at the menu system, the menu systems all look the same, and it's because there's a design language in there that has kind of been sussed out as what people are used to and tend to be the best. So it'll be interesting to see, and we really won't know for probably at least the next 5 years. We'll really have to wait and see. As Unreal Engine is out this year, most development cycles go in somewhere between 4 to 5 years, 6 to 7 if they've had problems or they've had to go back, or the scope is so big, or they have the development time and they can. But genuinely, we're probably not going to see anything out of Unreal Engine 5 that will take full advantage of its potential for at least the next 5 years. So it'll be interesting to see what games they decide to do with Unreal Engine 5. But it is amazing to think that already we're seeing games like Fortnite take advantage of the engine and migrate to that. I would love to see Sea of Thieves migrate to Unreal Engine 5. I don't know how feasible that is given the nature of the game, just having it all be sea and there's very little, you know, actual land in comparison to the actual amount of sea that you sail around on. Just to find out, like, they've already had major issues balancing the actual physics of that game. So I'd be interested to see, like, just how they're able to do some stuff in that case. So with the announcement of Unreal Engine 5 getting launched, we also heard from Crystal Dynamics. I mentioned earlier, Crystal Dynamics is now launching or now working on the next iteration of their Tomb Raider game. Their latest trilogy was something that took a lot of notes from the Uncharted series after Uncharted took notes from the original Tomb Raider series. So it's nice to kind of see how things are kind of going in a cycle here. I'm excited to see what Crystal Dynamics can do with a new Tomb Raider game on Unreal Engine 5, like how realistic they can actually get that to look, especially given that we're going to be seeing some of the talent from Bend Studios. And again, this is kind of with Jeff Ross. He was the director for Days Gone. He is now moving over to design director for Crystal Dynamics. It's yet to be seen if he's actually going to be on Tomb Raider, but given his desire to work on Uncharted, Tomb Raider seems like the next best bet. Given his experience with Unreal Engine, I can imagine he'll probably fit in pretty well. And they probably already have people that they are going to be hiring for the pre-production of the next Tomb Raider game. Is this something that you guys are excited for? Do you want the next Tomb Raider game? Is that something that was worth your time when the last Tomb Raider games came out? I have them. I haven't played them because I really have only gotten to play a few games in my life, it seems like. But Tomb Raider is one of those ones where I've got them. I've got them downloaded. I just need to sit down and actually play through them. I got stuck after jumping into Uncharted 3 and started to get fatigue of that. So I still want to go back and finish up my Uncharted playthroughs to get that experience, because, man, 2 is just absolutely fantastic. But genuinely, I think this is really good for gaming. We didn't get a big announcement this week as far as like somebody acquiring somebody else or, you know, some console war coming out and talking about what consoles sold the best. All the consoles are selling really well. They're all doing really well. There was some speculation about whether or not Xbox had paid Foxconn to get priority on chips for Xbox Series X's and stuff. It's not going to matter in the long run. When PlayStation can make enough consoles to meet supply, we'll start to see like where people start to go. But the consoles are the same thing. It's really just the exclusives and Game Pass that it comes down to. Whether you want the PlayStation exclusives or you want the Game Pass functionality for your Xbox, like those are basically the things that are determining the difference between the two consoles. Both are equal and have different talking points, I guess would be the thing. Like one is faster with the hard drive, one is faster or better for the graphics. Like it's just there's a little bit of give and take between both. That's because they're made by different companies, but they achieve basically the same thing, because developers want to know what the hardware is going to be like for them to be able to make their games on, and they're going to try and get the best game consoles out for the cost that they can afford to sell them at. And it's all just kind of the same at the end of the day. So best bet is just to get one of each and enjoy the exclusives on both of them. Rounding things out, I wanted to talk about LEGO Star Wars The Skywalker Saga. This is something that came out this week. It is at an 82 on OpenCritic. And boy, howdy, there is a lot of video game in this LEGO Star Wars game. I picked it up on launch and I got to dive into it. I'm probably about good 6 or 7 hours in, and I picked up on Force Awakens because my wife loves Rey, and that was what she chose when I gave her the option to pick which trilogy I should jump into. Right off the bat, right when you get into the actual game, it gives you the opening movie for each of the different trilogies, whether it be the prequels, the main games, or the sequels. You get to decide where you want to jump off to. So if you're a prequels fan because you're, you know, a millennial, then you're great. You'll have a good time with that. If you're Gen X or like beginning millennial or even before then, you'll probably want to jump into the main games. If you're like my wife and like having a female protagonist and BB-8, you do what she says and you jump onto Force Awakens because you want to go see Kylo Ren in his boxy self, because that's the joke you have to make with Lego. So far my playthrough, this is definitely a game that is very much a Lego game. They've done a good job with the humor. I really like it. I think the over-the-shoulder aiming is amazing for the game. I think it really does kind of build in some of that more current gameplay style that you would come to expect with most shooters or any game that has shooting instead of just the run frantically spamming the button. There is a combo system. It is not a very interesting combo system. There is a skill-based system that requires a lot of Kyber bricks, which are just the different version of the gold bricks that you would find in regular Lego games. They're everywhere, and the way that you get them is just kind of solving small little puzzles, whether it be figuring out how to get up to a certain location or uncovering a secret power thing conduit that you need to light up to be able to get that, or discovering what the combination on a block, a couple blocks are to be able to open up a cage. They're everywhere. There's, I think, 1136 Kyber blocks, and the first skills, just as your core skills, not including the different skills as far as like each of the different characters having either they're a scavenger or they're a bounty hunter or they're a light wielder or they're a dark wielder or they're I'm trying to think of some of the other ones, an imperial agent or a rebel. Aside from just those skills, which will help kind of boost their personal abilities, like we'll take Rey for example. Rey has three different abilities. One's a big blaster, one's a hover jet, which is just like a jetpack that lets you glide, and then the other one is like a net launcher that lets you build in climbable or scalable areas in certain areas. The skills that you can put into there just kind of buff those different abilities, and those abilities are kind of just used whenever you run into those things in the environment. You can switch to any of the characters that you've unlocked. So if you happen to be running around in a level and you see something that one of the characters that you're using isn't able to actually access that, whether it be like a grapple or blowing up an area or throwing a grenade, you can always swap immediately to one of the other minifigs or one of the other characters to be able to get access to that, as long as you have the character that is associated with it. Otherwise, what you're going to have to do is play through the level till you unlock free play, which is just by completing the actual level. And then once you do that, you can always go back with the character that you want or a character that you need to be able to unlock those different features. Overall, so far, I'm really enjoying my time with it. It's great to play through the Skywalker saga in a fun, lighthearted sense. The first ability that I really pushed to getting after trying to get all the different little Kyber bricks was the stud magnet, which is a fun phrase to even say on a podcast. But once you get that, after investing, I think, 4 points into the core abilities, you get that fifth one. You put that fifth one into the magnet ability, and it just makes running around the level so much more fun, because it's less concerning of you to have to try and figure out like, okay, am I getting all the studs? I got to get the true Jedi level so I can get all the Kyber bricks for that level. Just play through and have fun. Don't necessarily worry about the studs. Sometimes it's fun just to play through the game, because essentially you're just reliving the movies, but with a little bit of humor, a little bit of twist, keeping it friendly. The co-op's nice. The co-op just splits the screen. I believe it's a local co-op. So if you want to be able to play with someone at home, this is a great opportunity. I will say that if you're debating it right now, Lego games, most of the time, will drop in price fairly quickly. So if you don't want to pay the $60 or $70 for the deluxe versions, you could probably hold off for about 6, 7, 8, 9 months, probably 9 months. And you'll probably see a good dip in this. It'll probably drop down to about $40, $50 for the normal and deluxe editions. It did have a really cool steel book from Best Buy, from what I saw, or Amazon, I think, might have had it as well. where it was effectively Han Solo as the minifig, but frozen in carbonite. So the Steelbook was definitely really cool. I ended up picking up on Xbox digitally because there's a deal that was going on that I need to actually send a message into Xbox support because I purchased the game after activating a card that allowed me to get 6,000 reward points, Microsoft reward points, if I purchased it digitally. And it didn't register my purchase. So this was something that I saw was something else that someone else was having trouble with through the Xbox podcast Twitter. So thanks for reaching out on there. And I do plan on reaching out to them to let them know. They did the same thing before I got an opportunity and found out that they actually just added the 6,000 points manually to their account since I had recently just redeemed like a $10 gift card. So effectively, I got the deluxe version for the cost of the standard version, and it gave me the Mandalorian cosmetics and Obi-Wan and stuff, and I just it's totally worth it in that case. This was one that I wanted to get ahead of time just to kind of have something fun to play. I'm still working on that, as well as my playthrough of Guardians of the Galaxy, which is really fun. But I'm also still trying to get through Ghost of Tsushima because I'm in the third act and I'm close to being done. I've just got like a couple side missions left and then to kind of clear out the rest of the map before I finish up that golden path and then jump into Iki Island because, God, that game is so good. That game is like almost perfect, man. I tell you, that game just keeps going and just keeps being awesome. So those are kind of the different things that I'm playing. Sea of Thieves is going strong. There's a bunch of new content coming on the 21st for Pirate Legends. If you're not a Pirate Legend, there's plenty of ways to get to Pirate Legend. You just have to play the video game and actually jump in when they have big events, like right now where they are actually doing Athena's Fortune, like double golden glory for Athena's Fortune this weekend. And then I think on Sunday they'll have it for every trade company. But I'll get more into that as we actually get closer to the weekend, where I'll be recording my episode of Keelhauled Podcast to kind of talk about the news going in there. There's still no podcast for Destiny 2. I'm still not doing that because I just don't have time to keep up on everything going on with that, even though I still read the TWABs like a fool, thinking that there's going to be something other than hidden kittens in there that are quick linked to or smart linked to the random letter K in the TWAB. So that's going to be it as far as the news that came out this week. I'm trying to think of some of the stuff that might actually be coming in the future. We just got the latest edition of MLB Baseball 2022. Oddly enough, it's ranked at a 76. That came out the same day as Lego Star Wars. And I'm kind of surprised that it's reviewing as low as it is. I actually kind of expected it to be a little bit higher. Nothing too much of note that's actually coming out during the next rest of this month, unless you're a Nintendo fan and you're looking forward to Nintendo Switch Sports, which is kind of like the Wii Sports, but that won't be coming out until the 29th. I still haven't watched the third episode of Halo. Everyone seems to be a little bit happier with this episode, but I'm still behind on that and Moon Knight just because it's been an absolutely crazy week for me to be able to get into this. And for some reason, I still find myself playing World of Warcraft, which is ridiculous. So that's kind of the main things that are going on this week. And I think this is going to be kind of a weird outro because I'm already in it and I just realized I haven't really taken a break. So we'll just kind of roll with it and go from there, see how things play. But for the most part, that's it as far as the week goes. So hopefully you guys had a good week. That was it as far as the news. There's no emails. There's no reviews that I've seen. Thank you to those that are listening and sorry for the more informal episode this week. I really didn't know how to break up this episode as far as like different segments go. I mean, everything is for the most part all kind of geared towards normal gaming news. I think there's going to be a lot of games coming out in the future for Xbox that are going to be amazing thanks to Unreal Engine 5 and what they're doing with that. Can't wait. I think Xbox and PlayStation are in a really good place right now. I'm finally seeing Xbox S's in the wild, which is really awesome. And I've been seeing deals where people are actually selling them for like $250. So I am like super tempted to pick up an Xbox Series S for streaming, just to have in the actual office here. I don't know where I'd stick it. I'd probably have to find a place. And I've been tempted to pick up one of those new HD Elgato capture cards that actually has variable refresh rate and capturing at 4K 60 and streaming to 4K 60, because I think that's where we're going. I think Twitch is playing around with the 4K stuff, and if that's the case, then a console with a good capture card might be the cheapest way to get into that if you've already got a PC. If not, just buy a really nice PC, man. That's what's gonna do you. But that the new Elgato capture card is insane. I'm sorry that I didn't actually talk more about that. But genuinely, there's not much to really talk about. It's a new capture card. It's got some really new stuff. I think it's going to be super expensive, but that's okay, because I think it's going to be worth it. And you know, let everyone else kind of play around with it and see how it goes, to see if it's worth it and stuff. Because I don't know if I can justify spending $200 on a capture card to make my Xbox Series X look cool on a stream when I can already stream from the console itself. So yeah, let me know what you guys think. Would it be worth it? Is it worth it? I don't think it's worth it yet, but that's just me. Anyway, that's going to do it for this episode. Thank you all so much for listening to the rambling. I will try to make sure that I keep these under an hour, so that way you get all the news without having to worry about all the fluff. And yeah, I think that's it. So folks, thank you for listening. And we'll be back next week with another episode of the Xbox Wrap-Up.